Hello, and welcome to the Golden Thread Conversations. I'm your host, Judy Murdoch, and today I am so happy to be talking with Alexandra Yu. Alexandra is an editor with 31 years of experience, and her guiding principle is encouragement through editing. In 2012, she started her own company, Loomis & Lyman, to help authors navigate the daunting world of self-publishing. After seeing how hungry her friends in the coaching world were for knowledge about publishing, Alex started Writer's Ed to provide nonfiction writers' guidance, community, and support. Her greatest joy is helping them become authors and authorities. Cool. So, Alex, welcome.
Glad to be here.
So, You've been in the publishing world for 31 years. That's a long time.
Yeah.
I'm curious, how have you seen the publishing industry change?
Well, a lot of my experience is with textbooks. But what's happening in the textbook world is happening with all publishers. And that is the move in the 90s from publishing companies being run by publishers, and then they started merging, and then they started being run by business people and who don't necessarily know how a book is made or how to work with authors. And it's become more about smaller budgets, tighter schedules. For example, it could take, in the good old days, it could take 2 to 3 years to fully develop a new textbook program, whereas now it's done in just a matter of months. So that, plus the offshore workers, the trendies offshore workers, has really changed the industry. And as far as traditional publishing, you still have like the big six publishers, like Penguin, Random House, all of those. But the rise of desktop computers and, programs that allow people to do their own page layouts, that created the rise in self-publishing. And at first that was considered, people look down on self-publishers because they didn't have the quality and whatnot. But nowadays, self-publishing authors are savvy enough to know they need editing. They know they need professional cover design, all the bells and whistles, if they want to be able to sell their book and have it stand out in a crowded marketplace.
Right. That makes sense. So you kind of touched on it to some degree. Maybe we don't need to go into this as much as I thought. I wanted to ask a little bit about the challenges that these changes have brought and also some of the opportunities it's opened up. And I know you just mentioned that in a way it's given sort of the power of the press, if you will, to the individual. And then on the other hand, just because you have the capability of publishing something does not necessarily mean that anybody is going to actually look at it, because there is an abundance of, DIY content out there now. And so that has brought, the challenges of, having something that's really, quality and appealing and probably cuts through the noise. Any other challenges or opportunities, in your opinion, that the shift has opened up for people?
Well, I think as far as opportunity goes, I think the greatest benefit has been to people who were traditionally marginalized by the big publishers, women, people of color, basically anyone. If you weren't white, heterosexual male, you had a tougher time making it in the publishing industry than if you're a person of color, if you're a woman, certainly a woman of color. And publishing is now trying to change that disparity, but self-publishing has certainly opened up the field to voices that have been traditionally marginalized. And that's a good thing, because we need to hear everybody. We can't just hear from a certain sector of the population.
That makes my heart feel happy hearing you say that. You know, I really love the idea of there just being diversity and just representation.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's a great thing. And you're right. It's kind of, it hadn't occurred to me in some ways how quickly this change has been happening. So yay, more of it. So you are an editor. You are a proud editor. You wear your title proudly. And, you know, most people, and to some degree, I include myself in this, don't really, if you're outside of publishing, I don't know if many people really understand what editors do. I know as a technical writer, typically editing was more along the lines of checking for, you know, typos and, you know, cleaning up a little, some of the language and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it wasn't the kind of editing where somebody was really helping me shape my content and improve it. So, Alex, can you get into a little bit more about, you know, what is the role of an editor? Like, what roles do you play? And how does that, like, you know, help the content?
Sure. Well, the problem lies in, with confusion comes in, there are so many different kinds of editors. Editors don't just do one thing across the board. For example, traditional publishers, you've got your acquisitions editor, and they're the ones who decide whether or not the publisher should buy the book, the manuscript rather, and then turn it into a book. You've got developmental editors who are basically the first people to look at the manuscript. And they're the ones who will do either a manuscript evaluation or a full developmental edit. And they look at all the big picture things. They're familiar with, you know, what's traditional, say you're writing a fantasy story, for example. So a developmental editor who's well-versed in fantasy knows what the expectations are, knows what, you know, the market wants to see. Mm-hmm. And they'll help shape your book by commenting on things like characterization. Is the plot consistent? You know, are characters stereotypical? Mm-hmm. You know, they look at the big picture things. Mm-hmm. And then the next editor in line would be the copy editor, the line editor, and that's what I do.
Okay.
And that's where you start looking at, you know, you're getting more focused. Mm-hmm. So instead of looking at the big picture things, we look at, you know, how do the paragraphs flow together? Mm-hmm. We're looking for grammar, we're looking at typos, we're looking at punctuation errors, we'll do some fact checking. Mm-hmm. You know, again, we'll look for continuity things that the developmental editor might have missed, but we're a little more focused and, you know, we're not concerned about, will this help your book sell? We're just concerned about, you know, making sure it's readable.
Got it.
And then next in line from that is the proofreader. And traditionally the proofreader comes in after the book has been typeset, but more and more it's becoming the last person to look at the manuscript before it gets typeset. Mm-hmm. So that's just like looking up past to make sure, you know, looking for stray typos and whatnot. If you're looking at it once the book has been typeset, you're looking at, you know, did any errors creep in during the production process?
Okay. So, Alex, one of the word you used was typesetting. And I don't know if everybody, I'm not even sure I necessarily understand what typesetting means.
It's kind of an old fashioned term now because no one takes you know, the hot metal type and sets it on a page,
right,
piece of paper. But it's when, you know, a designer, you know, you've got your finished manuscript and then it's sent to a designer or formatter, and then they, you know, they'll choose the font that the book is set in.
Okay.
And then they make sure that, you know, the font is correct and is applied consistently.
Okay.
They'll create,
I see,
the styles for the heads and whatnot.
Okay. Okay.
They make it look pretty.
Yeah. 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 No, I was just trying to make a distinction because, I mean, I kind of, you know, I'm old enough to remember the days when they actually did typesetting, you know, and did the, right, the newspaper plant tour and all that kind of stuff. And they'd show you how they did that. And now, because everything is digital, I was trying to like understand like what that actually meant. So that was a good explanation. So basically, it's almost ready to go. It's almost ready to start getting copies to begin getting printed.
And right. it's when the book starts to actually look like a book instead of a Word document in 12-point times New Roman.
Right.
You've got it's in pages, numbered pages, table of contents, all the heads are in place and whatnot.
Right. Yeah. I actually went through that process a couple times. So that's bringing it all back to me. No, it wasn't bad. It was okay. I mean, it was a text. It was like a user manual, and those aren't terrible. They're not super complex. There's not a lot of stuff going on that. So, I also wanted to ask, tell me a little bit more about Writer's Ed and, you know, what kinds of issues do you address? Because, you know, I, as somebody, I haven't had any experience in publishing, but I certainly have a lot of experience in content development. Mm-hmm. And I've published a small, like, kind of nonfiction how-to sort of a workbook. So what kinds of, you know, like, typically, what kinds of issues do people in your group bring to you? And how do you help people?
Well, I started Writer's Ed because, you know, through getting coaching for my business development, I've become friends with a lot of people who are coaches or who sort of work in allied fields with coaching. And a lot of them want to write books, but they don't know how to get started. They don't know anything about the publishing process, let alone the editing process. They just know they need to know something about it, but they don't know how much they need to know. I looked around and there are loads of groups for fiction writers, even down to like specific genres.
Right.
But there's very little out there for nonfiction writers. And the one main group for nonfiction writers that's out there has thousands of members.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great group, but if you're here, you're going to feel kind of lost.
Yeah, for sure.
And my friends, you know, they didn't necessarily want something that big. They just, they're like, Alex, we want you.
Right, so I
started this group.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's still very small, but, you know, we've had discussions about, we don't feel like writing. We've talked about, you know, one of the members, she's ready to start, you know, selling her book. It's published.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've had discussions about marketing and what she's found out about marketing. You know, someone came to me and said, hey, I got this email from this person who says they're an agent and they can, you know, they claim to do all this. Is this legit? And so I looked it up. I did some research. I said, no, it's not. it's basically, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. And then it's just a lot of it is, you know, how do I know how long my book should be?
Yeah.
And, you know, just basic questions like that. And,
those are a lot of really
a place where they can come together and ask each other questions or cheer each other on. And they're seen, they're heard, they're not lost in a crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that I really see the value of that, having your attention and in a sense you are kind of I used to go to I used to attend an artist way group, and the leader used to call us baby artists. And I mean, to me, like the vision I get is of you sort of being the mother hen, and you have these little baby chicks who are a little fragile.
I would just assume. I think it's more like a classroom situation.
Okay.
Where, like at a college or university, where people know. I mean, they know they're experts in their own field.
Right. I understand that.
And I'm an expert mom. So,
right.
So it's like we're seeing each other as equals, not as
Okay.
I certainly don't consider them my children. No, I see them more as like in students.
Okay, fair enough.
And that's kind of where I went with writer's ed. I took from mm-hmm. driver's ed to writer's ed.
Okay.
So
All right.
Driver's ed was terrifying. Writer's ed is not terrifying.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so it's kind of like you've got like a co-pilot, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. That's a good analogy.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Probably just me wanting to have a mother hen, help me with things sometimes. What else did I want to ask you? So when it comes to marketing books, because I think book marketing is one of those things that can feel a little daunting, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I want to ask you like specific advice you give people, but maybe more like the nature of advice, like what types of things are people wanting help with?
Well, my philosophy is if we as editors can reach writers before they actually start writing, we can solve half the problems we see as we're editing. And one of the things I tell people is before you start writing, you have to know who you're marketing to, because that informs, your audience for your book. If you're going to seek out an agent for your book, the agent will want to know what your marketing plan is.
Mm-hmm.
Publishers will want to know what your marketing plan is. And you can't write your book without knowing who your audience is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's key to marketing as well. Once they're actually ready to start marketing the book, there are so many resources out there. And again, it's daunting. And I don't think authors realize how much marketing they have to do themselves.
Right.
Even if it's traditionally published.
Yeah.
They just think, mm-hmm. I'm an author. I'm going to write the book. Well,
yeah.
You got to sell it too.
That's right.
So that's one thing I would urge people to do is like research marketing and sort of like get it into your head. You're going to have to do marketing. You're going to have to do sales. And I know people are sales averse. But if you want to be, an author, you got to get your words out in front of people. Otherwise, it's no good writing that book.
Right.
And sales and marketing is part of that.
Well, I have a book, the book that I wrote, it's about info products, which you would think would mm-hmm. be a pretty good topic. And I was pretty clear on who I was marketing it to, small business people, particularly those who are experts in their field.
Mm-hmm.
I think I sold maybe 20. I had hard copy and digital copy, and I still have about 1,000 sitting up in my attic. The glue has melted off the bindings, so they're loose.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm still trying to figure out a productive and positive way to contribute those books in some way, because the information in there is still, I think, useful. It's just that I actually did pretty well marketing them, and I broke even with publishing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's more than most.
I know. but at the same time, like I think most people do not realize, like selling 2,000 books—that's a lot. Physical books.
Actually, one of the nice things about the publishing process now is that you can do things print on demand.
That's so
sweet.
Or
you can sell your books as a digital download. And then you don't have to worry about that attic full of books that you can't get rid of. Right. And a lot of people are repurposing their content. You know, they're taking their old, you know, the books they published in hardcover, they're updating the information and then making it a digital product.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. I will figure it out. That can be a different conversation between you and
I. Sure. No, I mean, marketing is like its own beast. And there are people who are experts on book marketing. And I'm not an expert. I just know enough to say, hey, this is a good resource. You should check this person out. And, you know, and then if they still feel lost and confused, you know, we can have a conversation and maybe I can help them think through their problem.
Yeah, I know. I think most of our ideas about book marketing probably come from the old publishing industry where, you know, like a publisher would sponsor, you know, a book tour and, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, we're talking really big budgets where self-publishing, you can certainly do a book tour. You absolutely can do it. But it is up to you to actually, you know, schedule things and work with individual bookstores and all that good stuff. And it is a lot of work. There's a lot of logistics and phone calls and stuff to do.
Yeah.
Absolutely worth it, right? If
Well, actually, one of the interesting things about COVID is the fact that people are now using Zoom and whatnot so much that authors are finding it easier to make it to discussions of, you know, book clubs and libraries and whatnot, because they don't have to leave their home.
Right.
So they can go halfway, they can talk to a group halfway around the world without leaving their home.
So are they, so like are libraries, let's just say like independent bookstores, other like book groups, are they, you know, interested and maybe perhaps even looking for authors who can come and speak to them?
As far as I know, they are. Again, that's not something I'm completely familiar with, but I know I've seen a lot, you know, on Facebook ads from bookstores and whatnot saying, oh, we're having a, you know, come chat with this author, you know, via Zoom or whatever. Just, you know, they set up an event and, you know, have the Zoom link and some are free, some you have to buy a ticket. You know, a lot of my favorite authors are doing that. I mean, they'll even host events on Facebook for their fans on their personal pages.
Right. I know, like the coach and entrepreneur Martha Beck has been championing writing and writers for a long time, and I know that she's done. I've taken a class with her, and she's done events on Facebook. I enjoy listening to her. She has a lot of really good experience and advice. I have a question for you, and I've been really wanting to ask somebody about this for the longest time. I went through a period where I swear in my spam, you know, like my spam box and in my text messages, I was getting all of these offers about being a best-selling author, right? And it would be like, you know, all these celebrities are best-selling authors and blah, 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 blah. And we can make you a best-selling author too. And, you know, I honestly, I felt that was bullshit, you know, from the minute I saw them, and I just spam them and get rid of them. But who are these people? And like, how successful are they?
Well, they must be pretty successful because I see those ads all the time on Facebook. And that's another reason I started Writer's Ed, is because coaches, you know, in particular, or any entrepreneur, is just bombarded with those ads.
Yeah.
And they're all for systems.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
There are two things. They're either you buy a system that'll help you write a bestseller in 3 days, or they're a front for like buying a marketing funnel.
Oh.
A marketing system, because that's how you would, you know, that if you're a nonfiction writer, if you're a coach or an entrepreneur, you're not going to make money on your book. You're going to make money on your services.
And very true.
It's usually like a lead magnet.
You are absolutely, Alex, I am so glad you brought that point up. You're absolutely correct. No, I mean, seriously, that is something that I feel like I've known that for a while now, but I was a marketing coach. But nonetheless, if you're buying a marketing funnel, what exactly does that mean? I mean, what are they giving you?
Well, the thing about those, you know, buy my course and you'll write a bestseller in 3 days. The thing about it, you're buying their system, and that system might not work for you.
Exactly.
So if you try their system and you fail, you're going to feel like a piece of crap, and you're going to have wasted your money.
Exactly.
And the thing people need to understand is that writing a book is not one size fits all.
Yes.
You know, everyone has their own speed. Everyone has their own goals, and you have to find the path that works best for you.
So I'm gonna stop you right here, and let's pretend we take a yellow highlighter and flashing lights, and we're going to take that sentence: the system may not work for you. In fact, it probably will not.
Right.
And make it flashing in front of people, because that has been one of my biggest pet peeves about marketing and coached marketing and all that stuff for the longest time, is that generally speaking, the people who do it are already very good at self-promotion. And you know, you buying their course is, you know, a testament to their prowess at self-promotion. And most people, you know, a lot of authors, if you're a little bit more introverted and you don't love getting out in front of people and, you know, speaking your own praises and stuff, it will not work. And as you said, you will feel like, I mean, this has happened to me multiple times, and you come out and you feel like, what is wrong with me that fail-safe system did not work for me? Right.
And no one should feel like that. And, you know, again, I wanted to create a safe space where I'm not bombarding them with buy my editing services.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a safe space for people to ask the questions they might be afraid to ask elsewhere.
I love that.
And, you know, support each other and be a community. And you know, there's no set pace to go to. There's no, you know, there's no course involved or anything like that. It's just individualized attention, recognizing that everybody's publishing path is different.
Yeah, yeah. It feels almost more to me, Alex, office hours for a teacher. You know, just kind of open hours.
I do. What we have in Writer's Ed is there's a monthly group call. Mm-hmm. Where we can talk about, you know, problems and stuff. And then I also offer office hours where people can get one-on-one time with me.
It sounds really good. I particularly like the questions you were afraid to ask. Because there are so many questions that seem kind of stupid. And, you know, I know, like, I feel, you know, like self-conscious about bringing up, like, you know, I should know this. So I also wanted to just ask you, what role do your cats play in your business?
For the editing business, well, cats and books have traditionally gone together since, you know, time immemorial.
That's so true.
Of course, they supervise my work.
Yes.
Sometimes they add to it by walking on the keyboard. Sometimes they destroy it. The other day, one of the cats came by and I like leaned on my keyboard, and whatever it did just destroyed a PDF and ruined
days
worth of work. That was interesting. I've never seen that happen before. It all went gray. The PDF just turned all gray.
Goodness. I'm glad it's not just me. You know, I mean, you have more cats than I do, but my cats still do their share of destructive things.
You know, the cats are a good icebreaker too if they make an appearance during, you know, a client consultation.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, good icebreaker.
I just like that one of my cats, Lily, who's actually curled up in a chair right next to me right now, she's just kind of like this warm little, you know, warm little thing. And every once in a while, I can just, you know, bend over and give her a little, give her a little rub, or every once in a while she'll just make like a happy, you know, happy little cat noise, you know.
Yeah.
Reminds me.
If I'm working too much, you know, they come and get me and say, hey, pay attention to us. So they create nice little, you know, breaks from work and whatnot.
Exactly. They are. They remind you that, like, whatever problems or concerns you're sort of dwelling on at that particular moment, the cats, for me at least, are basically saying, you know, there are other things in this world, and quite frankly, we care less about the stuff you're worried about. So it's a good little break. So let me just ask you, are there any topics or things that we have not yet talked about that you'd really like to speak about?
I'd like to touch on the encouragement through editing.
Please.
Idea, you know, my broader business, because while I have writer's ed for nonfiction writers, I do work with, you know, a variety of authors and writers. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen from some editors is, you know, they won't touch small projects.
Mm.
You know, I saw one editor is like, I won't work with anyone who doesn't have an outline. Others like, I won't work with new writers because, you know, there's too much work involved.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that's part, you know, and good for them for getting to the point in their business where they can afford to be,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't want, you know, picky or whatever about who they want to work with. Mm-hmm. But I think that lends to the sort of the gatekeeping accusations that have been thrown at editors. Mm-hmm. You know, editors are gatekeepers.
Agreed.
We need, you know, the whole, oh, I can't think of the word for it now, but like the journal, open access, you know, the whole trend for that in scholarly publishing, you know, editors are gatekeepers. We don't need editors or anything like that.
Right.
You know, as long as there are standards for, you know, English then, or whatever language you're working in, then you will need editors.
For sure.
But I don't think I have the right to say, you can publish, you can't publish.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know the market well enough to say this will sell, this won't sell. So, you know, a lot of what writers do, the mistakes they make, yes, you know, we editors see the same mistakes over and over and over again. But if we take the time to educate authors in a nice way,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, it just benefits us all down the line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah. I think it kind of goes back to
So in my editing, I, you know, I point out mistakes and stuff, but hopefully in a nice way. And I always try to, you know, to be encouraging as well. Say, mm-hmm. yes, you know, I know it looks like you've made a lot of mistakes and stuff like that, but, you know, take a good look. Those are fixable mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if those are minor mistakes, you made a lot of minor mistakes, but they're minor mistakes. You're, you know, you wrote a book. That's more than, you know, most people do.
Yes.
So feel good about that.
Yeah. I think that's a really, really good point. That the first time I talked to somebody, and this was a developmental editor, and it was a few years ago, it was supposed to be a collaborative project, and I think it was something about like creativity or how to foster creativity or something like that, people's creative processes. And I put together an outline and I brought it to a family friend who was a acquisitions and developmental editor for a large association.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know what I expected to hear, but when he and I talked, what he really talked about, which I thought was so like unbelievably helpful, was he really looked more at the intention of the book and mm-hmm. the audience, and really looked at it as sort of, what kind of a difference are you trying to make with this book? What benefits are you trying to, what benefits do you want this book to bring to the reader? Like, how do you want somebody to be, you know, like before they read the book and then after they read the book, like how is the book going to change things for them? And those were such great questions. And he also was very complimentary about the idea, which was nice. That was really, I found that very encouraging. But I came out of that conversation, it was maybe 20 minutes, and I felt so much more encouraged and confident. And I came away with the idea that this was something it was worthwhile, and it was definitely worth putting the time and effort into turning into a book.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a positive experience.
Yeah. And unfortunately, not all editors are like that. You know, a lot of them won't even talk to you on the phone. They just want to do everything by email because they don't like talking on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't think you, personally, I prefer to talk either face-to-face or over the phone because so much can get lost in an email. A lot of tone and whatnot can get lost in an email.
Absolutely agreed. Very
much.
And,
you know, I offer a free 30-minute initial consultation. And usually I only need, say, like 20 minutes.
Okay.
And people come away from those initial conversations, even if they don't choose to work with me, they're feeling so much better because they know there's at least one person out there who can help them.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows other people out there who can help her.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's if I can't help a person directly, I can at least guide them to resources to help them find someone who can.
That's great. Alex, if somebody wants to do a 30-minute consultation with you, how can they be prepared for it? Like what types of things do you want them to be able to bring to the conversation?
Well, if they have a manuscript or have even started a manuscript, I like to take a look at it so I know what they're working on.
Wow. I'm impressed. That's a lot.
So, I mean, it's just like a quick glance. Or even like a summary, if they can send me a summary of what, you know, what they're working on and, you know, why and what they hope to do with it. If they haven't started writing yet, I like to know, you know, how far have they gotten and, you know, is it still just ideas in their head? Have they started an outline?
Okay.
What problems are they having? You know, what's holding them back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are all really.
Because a lot of what's holding people back is simply just lack of knowledge. And certainly I can take care of that. So, yeah, and that's
awesome.
A big part of it. Like, they don't know what they don't know. So if we can figure out, okay, this is how much you need to know at this point in time. Worry about the rest down the road. They're like, oh, thank goodness.
Right. Yeah. And going back again to the comment that you made that I think, you know, just writing a book, whether it's good or bad, you know, however you may feel about it or however it is received, it's a big deal.
Absolutely. And that should be celebrated.
Absolutely. So I would say to anybody listening to this particular talk that if you have a book in mind or, you know, you've been really wanting to write on something for a while, go for it. And
absolutely.
Alex is available. You know, you can you can get a consult with her and she will give you some really, no, really solid advice on how to proceed. But I think that I think writing a book, you know, kind of really creating any sort of a piece of organized content, artwork, a film, whatever, you know, that's a little hero's journey right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, go ahead,
sorry.
Please.
And, you know, I'm looking at it from the perspective of a reader, too. I love to read.
I'm
being kind of selfish and wanting to bring out good books in the world because, you know, I want to bring out books that's
thank you. And I think, too, this is something I've felt for a very long time, that I think there is a almost like an infinite, endless hunger in people to discover new authors and new topics and new things that turn them on. You know, like you can never ever say, like, there just will never be too many books because you know, I know for myself, anytime I discover a new writer on a topic I like, man, that's just like, that makes me happy. It's like a gold mine.
Yes. And I think now too, you know, with more emphasis on diversity and people sort of like waking up to the fact that, you know, they have these unconscious biases that extends even to their reading list, you know, guilty. People are looking to diversify their reading. They want to hear new ideas. They want to read books by authors they may never have thought of before.
Mm-hmm. Well, the world needs new ideas. We need ideas. We need innovation because all the stuff that has brought the world to this place so far is not going to be enough to take us for the next 20 years. Just won't be.
Exactly.
So we need all those new ideas and innovation and thinking out of the box.
We need to hear from yes, we need that diversity in thought.
Yeah, I think the more the better. So Alex, thank you so much for spending some time with me.
Oh, I've enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Very cool.